Welcome to Mary's Cup of Tea, the self-love podcast for women. I'm your host, Mary Jolkowski, an author, speaker, and all-around self-love advocate. And this is the podcast that will inspire you to love yourself. Hello, self-lover. Before we dive into today's podcast episode, I want to make sure you know about my two books on self-love. If you're struggling with body image or self-acceptance, then I highly recommend you check out my first book, The Gift of Self-Love. It's a comprehensive workbook to help you build confidence, recognize your worth, and learn to love who you are. Thousands of people have this book, and the 5-star reviews are so amazing. They give me so much life. So I hope that this is something that can help you too. You can get it wherever books are sold by searching for The Gift of Self-Love or go to my website, maryscupoftea.com/book. After releasing The Gift of Self-Love and reading all your positive feedback, I realized that we really needed something to keep us going every single day. So not a deep dive workbook, but maybe like a micro dose of self-love in your daily life, which is why I wrote 100 Days of Self-Love. It's a guided journal with, you guessed it, 100 prompts that cover so many areas of life, including body, identity, purpose, emotions, mindset, relationships, and more. So you can really think of it as a metaphorical multivitamin, something to keep you going, or as I like to say, growing on your self-love journey. You can get this journal wherever books are sold as well by searching for 100 Days of Self-Love or go to maryscupoftea.com/journal. It's my mission to share all the self-love tea with you, so I hope that both my books and this podcast can do just that. You know that I wish to become a mom in the near future, but I'm also petrified about what the experience brings from the very get-go of fertility and trying to conceive to pregnancy and then birth and postpartum and motherhood, like raising not just a child, but hopefully raising a fully functioning, secure adult. And I watch so many of my mom friends go through ups and downs. And frequently think about how moms in our society do not have enough support. Now, of course, a majority of these issues are systemic, meaning mothers do not have access to not just individual mental health support, but also childcare that is inaffordable and inaccessible, or work-life balance, maternity and paternity leave, all that jazz that is a systemic and ongoing issue. We don't really talk about that in this episode, but Cameron Rogers is so good at sharing the daily ins and outs of motherhood. In this episode, Cameron talks about why she doesn't share her kids' names and faces online, what postpartum anxiety felt like for her, how motherhood gave her a new level of confidence, and she also shares some advice for new moms and ultimately like a big warm hug and permission slip to do things your way, whether you're a mom or thinking about becoming one. In case you're unfamiliar with Cameron Rogers, she's the host of the Freckled Foodie and Friends podcast, where she utilizes her unfiltered voice and humor to carve out a safe space on the internet for mothers. She passionately sheds light on the often overlooked trials and tribulations of motherhood, as well as the joys. And on her podcast, Freckled Foodie and Friends, she has amassed over 2 million downloads and features genuine sit-down conversations discussing wellness, mental health, of course, motherhood, and sometimes pop culture. Aside from her podcast, Cameron recently launched a Substack called Fill Your Cup, which is so in line with the Mary's Cup of Tea podcast. And overall, I love the way Cameron exists and creates on social media. She's a pleasure to follow, and I hope you enjoy this authentic conversation with her as much as I did. Hi, Cameron. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I love being a guest.
Yeah, and May is Mental Health Awareness Month, I think. Every month is Mental Health Awareness Month, but especially May. And I was like, who is a group that probably needs mental health support a bit more? And the first that came into my mind is mothers. It's also like Mother's Day month. And I just have such a special place in my heart for not just my mom, but like the concept of mothers in general. And I get very like passionate about we should have a matriarchy, but that's not what we're here to talk about. I really wanted to talk about like fears and anxieties and also the reality of being a mom and what that's been like for you, because you're so open about it on social media.
Thank you for you know, shedding light on this and opening this conversation as someone who hasn't become a mother yet, if it's something you're interested in being, because I think it does definitely get overlooked until you've maybe experienced it.
And I also know that the experience is such a trip that there's going to be so much that I didn't even think to think about until I get there.
I mean, you really, yeah, you don't know what you don't know. Like you can't prepare because so much is unknown until you're in it.
Do you think it's better to know things in advance and talk to people? Or do you think that like ignorance is bliss? Because my friend and I talk about that often. We're both like kind of like, you know, anxious researchers and asking questions. And she's like, I feel like our parents like didn't know and that was fine for them.
I think there's a nice middle ground that's hard to find. I think about this all the time, and I've had this conversation with my mom of how different it must have been to parent in her era, because I can't imagine not being able to just like pull out my phone and Google something right away if I needed an answer to something. And I don't mean the questions I should be asking my doctor, but something very fast or ordering something overnight during a feeding session like that. Accessibility, I can't imagine not having. However, I also think that we almost know too much, even as parents. Like, we're consuming social media that's telling us you have to do it this way or you're doing it wrong. And we're seeing everyone's opinions. And I think that, especially as a public facing person, can be taxing in a negative way. So I think there's a middle ground when it comes to over preparing. I was someone who almost like abundance of information overwhelms me. So I made the conscious decision, like, I'm not really going to read these books. I'm not going to deep dive, Google search. I'm not going to do these things. I'm going to have two friends that I really trust who have gone through this before and my doctor, and I will ask them questions and that's it. Like, I'm not going to go looking for these answers that I might not even need, if that makes sense. But I also think ignorance is bliss, but it's helpful to be prepared. So that's also why I share the content I share, because I do feel I had created this misillusion of what pregnancy was going to be like for me specifically. And so that's why I created the What the Fuck is Happening to My Body series when I was pregnant for the first time, because I just felt like no one had told me that these crazy things happen. And personally, I feel like that content is helpful to just like, oh, wow. That could happen. Didn't know that. Or, oh, that's happening to me. I'm not alone. But I don't know. It's hard. It depends on who you are as a person, whether information like really helps you or if ignorance kind of helps you.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know where I stand because it just kind of depends on the day. Like sometimes I feel very empowered by research and information. And I'm like, yes, I know this so I can prepare for it. And then other times I just feel crippled by it. When I talk to my mom, though, she's a character. I'll be like, Mom, did you ever struggle with like postpartum depression or anxiety? She goes, no, never. I never even know what that was. And I'm like, really? Like you never, everybody's talking about it now. Like you don't have any recollection of that. She goes, well, I remember having like hyperventilating and not being able to breathe and thinking I was going to drop you. But I don't think that was anxiety. I'm like, I would call that anxiety. And she said she had this intense fear where, yeah, she thought she was going to drop me.
I had really bad intrusive thoughts like that.
I wonder if they just didn't have the language to describe what that experience was.
I think they didn't have the language, but also I think my mom talks about this a lot with me. She's like, we weren't being encouraged to talk about these things. Like they were in this generation where they were working more than their mothers had. And they were almost forced to believe, like, you have to do it all. You're supposed to now work because, you know, if you want to be a feminist, you need a job. And you also are supposed to be raising your kids and don't ever complain about it. So I think that a lot of them were struggling, but they didn't have the language. And they also, I don't think, had the safe space to, like, honestly describe what they were experiencing.
The body and mind, like, biologically, it kind of does have this insane ability to black out the hard times, especially when it comes to reproduction, because it's in evolution's best interest to do so. And she told me that because I was like, Mom, why did nobody tell me about birthing the placenta? And she goes, oh, I don't even really remember doing that. But I guess, yeah, you're right. Like you have to get this thing out of you, I guess, the sac.
Well, to be fair to her, it's such an afterthought because the babies come out and the baby's put on your chest. And it's like you're in this whole new world where you're meeting this human that you've created and carried. And there's so much going on. Hopefully you've had a successful and healthy delivery. And so the placenta also, it kind of is just like coming out after a baby's been through the canal. It's just like, you know, so it isn't this big thing, but it is really cool. I'm not going to lie. I have a picture of mine because I was like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like, I need a photo before we move this away.
Is it painful?
No. Well, A, I was medicated. So I had an epidural. So my delivery was not painful. But if I didn't have an epidural, I can't imagine that after a baby comes out of your vagina, that the placenta would hurt. But I could be wrong. You'll have to ask someone that didn't have an epidural.
Okay, that's a good point. Let's back up a little bit. How did you know that you wanted kids in the first place? Because I know that right now, more and more people are talking about, you know, being child-free and choosing not to. And I definitely have thoughts where I'm like, maybe I don't want to shake up everything good and peaceful in my life. Did you always know, or how did that decision come about?
I honestly always knew. It was never a question for me. It was something I always knew I wanted. Like, I've been with my husband since we were 16, and we've just always kind of talked about it. It was always something that we thought would be in our future. So we never had the conversation of, do we want kids or not? It was more, when do we want to have kids? I will always say, like, I am in full support of the people who are child-free by choice. I love that this is a movement because I think about how much I wanted and love my children and how it was something I always knew I wanted in my future. And it's still hard. Is it amazing? Yes. And it's hard. So if it wasn't something I wanted and was kind of pressured into doing, I think it would be even harder. And I wish that, like, as a society, we accepted that people can do different things than the other. Like, we don't all have to live the same life. We can choose to go about our life differently, and we can have different interests and different passions. So I, as a mother, am so for people who choose not to have kids. Like, is it the best thing that's ever happened to me personally? Yes, but I really wanted children. I think it would have been hard for me to really sit down and be like, okay, we're ready to start trying, because I think it's always going to be scary. I don't know when you ever fully feel ready. And we actually had a surprise pregnancy. So we never had that moment of like, is now the right time? Let's start trying, which I think honestly helped me as an anxious person, because I would have been obsessive with planning and all of those things.
One of my favorite therapy accounts on Instagram, she's at Therapy for Women, and her name's Amanda White, but she posted just like a very short tweet text post where she said, nobody has an unbiased experience of what it's like to either have kids or not have kids.
It's so biased. And that's why I always just say, like, you do whatever the hell you want to do. If you want to have kids, that's amazing. If you don't want to have kids, that's also amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Am I hallucinating, or did you also have a background with disordered eating? Because I think that's when I started following you.
Yeah, I did. I never struggled with bulimia, and I wouldn't even say I struggled with anorexia, but I definitely struggled with orthorexic and like disordered eating thoughts. I was like very obsessed with every morsel of food that went into my body and what the ingredients were. And this thing I was actually just talking about with my therapist this morning of trying to quote unquote perfect every meal, like it had to be perfect. And it's been such an eye-opening experience. This is actually what our session was about this morning, of like reflecting and comparing my relationship with food now to what it was 6-5 years ago, because it's truly night and day and a complete 180. And I think motherhood is something that has helped me heal that relationship in ways that I never could have imagined.
Okay, how so?
Well, A, you simply don't have the brain space to think about these things. Like, I think that was the biggest thing for me, is that I was so obsessed and spending so much time thinking about something because it was the focus of my day. Like, it was all I thought about. And now with kids, I simply don't have the bandwidth to think about it all the time. There's so much else going on that I'm focused on that I can't constantly obsess over what I'm putting in my body or what meal's happening next. I've done a lot of personal work between therapy and, you know, journaling and meditating. And I think that's drastically helped. And a lot of like body positivity mantras and really repairing my relationship with myself. And that's played a huge role. But when it comes to the motherhood aspect of things, I have such an appreciation for my body that I never, ever could have imagined. It's a whole new level of confidence. And also just like the fact that this vessel created my two favorite humans on this planet is the coolest thing in the world. It's hard to put into words, but it's a whole new confidence for my body and an appreciation for my body. And with that, also the decision fatigue around food plays a big role. The fact that like I make so many decisions throughout my day for my kids involving food as well, that I'm just like, I just need to eat. I'm eating to survive. It's sustenance. It's not this big thing that needs to be made into a production. I'm just eating to fuel my body. And that's kind of it.
Do you think that's because you did work on your self-love and healing that relationship with food before you had kids? Because I know, especially when it comes to watching your body change and gain weight and then be different for a really long time, if not forever, I know that can be really difficult for some people.
I think for me, it was incredibly helpful that I got to where I was before I had kids. And I worked on that relationship with myself and the way I talk to myself, specifically my body. If it's something you struggle with and you do not have children, but you're interested in having children, I would prioritize working on it before kids. I think it's really important. During pregnancy, I'm not going to act like I never struggled with body changes. Of course, there are moments where I'm like, what is going on? Like, who is this person? Because it's really confusing to look in the mirror and not recognize yourself because it's such a sudden change. But I think for me, it was accepting that I was changing and really leaning into the gratitude for why my body was changing. It was creating a human. And looking at it with just like admiration instead of critiquing it, because it really is freaking so cool. Like, I don't think we talk about how cool it is enough. And also, lastly, I was raised in a very female dominated and self-critical surrounding, I can say. And I knew that I never wanted my children to see me talk badly about myself, especially around my body, whether I have sons or daughters. That was really important to me. And so that was like one of the reasons why I did the extra work to get to where I am and why I focus so much on like positive self-talk and affirmations and mantras and all of those things. And I do it with my boys too, but I just never wanted them to hear me criticize myself in that way.
About 3 years ago, I started putting together a playlist with uplifting, inspiring, and empowering songs. I originally did this for myself because I love music of all different genres, and every time I would notice a song that just made me feel good, I would add it to my self-love playlist. And now there are over 300 songs on my Spotify self-love playlist. And these tracks are perfect for when you're getting ready, trying to hype yourself up, or going through a struggle and need a reminder for how badass you are. If you love music as much as I do, then go to maryscupoftea.com/playlist to get the Spotify link. It will ask you for your email so that I can send you this self-love playlist. And full transparency, this will also put you on my email list where I send out a monthly newsletter about stuff I'm thinking about, personal things, things I don't really share on social media, and all the happenings in the Mary's Cup of Tea world. So go to maryscupoftea.com/playlist and let's start jamming to my self-love playlist together. How would you say that motherhood impacted your confidence as a whole, like outside of body image?
On one side of the coin, I am so confident in who I am. I'm really confident as a mother. I feel like my priorities have become clear. Like everything is stacked up against, would I rather do this or spend time with my children? And like, does this lead me to if I put in this work, will it eventually lead to maybe some more freedom to do what I want, to be able to spend more time with my kids or to provide them XYZ? Like, there's such a clear priority now that I didn't necessarily have before. And that's really helpful for me personally. I think I've stepped into the most like true version of myself. It's allowed me this ability, which I never really thought about beforehand, to tap into my inner child, which I still feel deeply connected to and is so fun to simply play and do things that we don't always encourage adults to do, but we encourage children to do, whether it be just like running around or doing a dance party or drawing, like just fun, creative things that are really enjoyable. I think on the other side of the coin, and maybe you will resonate with this, but I'm sure not all of your listeners will, it's hard to be a public facing person in any realm of the world. But I think also talking about parenting stuff in a public manner allows for a lot of criticism, specifically mom shaming. So that hasn't been the most fun aspect of things, but I am grateful that I'm confident in myself and like where I stand with my family, my kids, the people who know me, and just leaning on that.
One of my really good friends left hundreds of thousands of YouTube followers, thousands of dollars of monthly income, and pretty much like everything social media related a few months after she found out she was pregnant, because the mom shaming before she even had the baby was so intense for her, like reading comments on other people's pages and seeing what other moms are doing and what she should or shouldn't be doing and just all that anxiety around it. And she literally left it all like without ever looking back. And it's been 4.5 years.
I don't blame her.
I don't blame her either. I'm just seeing like a post and then seeing like the influx of opinions, and it's times a billion. Like there's nothing that'll get people more riled up than how women do things, especially mothers.
Yeah, it's very eye-opening.
Yeah. I even posted that I was just thinking about being a mom like maybe a year ago, and I was already getting the mom shaming.
I think that this is why I share content the way I do, of like, you can do whatever you want. Like, I look at my group of friends who are moms, and there's not one iota of mom shaming, not one tiny bit. And we do things differently. You know, even just the topic of breastfeeding, like my one friend decided she didn't want to breastfeed at all with her second, and she just never let her milk come in. My second breastfed for a few weeks. I stopped after like 8 weeks. My other friend breastfed for a long time. Like, no matter what, we all were so supportive in each other's decision to be like, you prioritize what works for you and your family. Same thing with childcare and how you navigate it, whether it's daycare, school, a nanny. Like, even as simple as going through this newborn experience most recently, the concept of sleep training. I said a few times, like, you know, we're choosing not to sleep train. I didn't feel pulled to it. You do whatever you want to do. I'm not against it. It just didn't feel right for me and my son. And I got a lot of people almost trying to force me into sleep training, which I found really interesting. And I'm like, I'm not even telling you what to do. I'm just saying I don't feel called to it. So I think the biggest thing I always try to do is remind people that like you have to figure out what works for you and your family, because there's no one size fits all approach when it comes to parenting.
I also think that the people who criticize others the most are the ones who feel the most anxious and uncertain in themselves. Like obviously everything's a projection. And I think when it comes to motherhood, sadly, a lot of moms are feeling, even if their kids are grown, you know, I see those kinds of comments a lot. Like I raised 4 kids, so I have the right to say whatever. Even if their kids are grown, right? They might, you know what I'm talking about, times 10.
Absolutely.
They might still be feeling that shame and regret and questioning themselves and doubting themselves. And it's easier for them to like project that out onto you than really confront it within themselves. Anyway, I think that's why it's very important, because it does start with us. Otherwise, it spreads like a disease.
There's a lot of comparison within parenting, which is really tough to quiet that voice. And I fall victim to it all the time. But what I always remind myself of, and I felt this deeply with my first, I remember vividly with like milestones. He was like just a little late in certain physical milestones. And I remember comparing and comparing and being at a park and seeing all these kids walk and me being like, oh my God, why is he still not walking yet? Am I doing something wrong? You know, this shame cycle. And then I took a step back and I was like, I'm currently taking like a 2-hour break from work to play with my son. It's a gorgeous day. We're at this park. Why am I ruining this moment comparing him to all these other kids instead of just enjoying the moment and having fun with him? It's such a waste of our time and energy to compare. I mean, it's true. Comparison is the thief of joy. Like, it robs you of potential opportunities of enjoyment.
One of the decisions that you've had to make for yourself is not showing your kids online, which I have so many questions about. And I know that's like a hot debate right now.
Look, I think there's a spectrum, as there is with everything. I do not believe that we should be creating pages specifically for children, posting them in, compromising ways and going against the clear evidence we have of like some of these TikToks with like hundreds and thousands of saves or deliberate commentary sexualizing your child. Like, I think that is so far the extreme that we've gotten to in certain cases where these children have become influencers without their consent. For me, I knew that that was never, ever, ever an option. What I think most people debate between is sharing their children sporadically in their feed and their stories, whatever, and choosing not to. For me, when my first son was born 3 years ago, I had decided with conversation with my husband that like I didn't want my page to be a bunch of just pictures of him. And I wanted to respect his privacy for his later life. And also, like, I was freaked out by people on the internet, whether it be these like random strangers who had access to my page, who I had no idea what their intent was with said images I would put out, or even just like the mean people that were trolling me. I couldn't fathom the idea of them trolling my child. And I posted maybe like in his first 6 months of life, 5 pictures of his face. Like, I was sporadically sharing him randomly. But then I remember feeling like I wanted to pull back. And there was one specific moment where this like millennial geared daycare in, I know they had a location in Manhattan. It might be a chain, I'm not sure, which we did not use, took a picture from my profile of me and my son on the beach and posted it in their grid, being like, so excited for summertime, our daycare still open, whatever, and tagged me. And I was like, what is happening here? And I messaged them being like, hey, take this down. A, you never asked. B, we don't even go to your daycare. And C, this is like, it felt so violating, even though they weren't necessarily like malintent with it. It felt very violating to me as a protector of my child. And that was the moment where I was like, you know what? Nah, we're going to scrub every image of him that I had posted in my feed. And from now on, I'm just not going to share his face. So this, I will say, has been interesting. Some people get worked up if I say I don't share my children. They're an extension of my life. My content will reference them. I'll make my toddler's lunch as part of a TikTok series. Like, sometimes he's behind the camera and you can hear him talking. I don't live in a world where I can just like escape from them and do my entire job. So like, they're in the background speaking sometimes. Their backs are in photographs or videos. I reference them under pseudonames. That was a decision I chose to make because I felt I had been sharing my first son's name when he was younger. And to no fault of anyone. No one was malintent, but they were messaging me and using his name. And I just kept feeling like icky that all these people were referencing him by his name when they actually hadn't met him. And it was the same way I felt when I was at a playground in the West Village and I'd see these influencers' kids and I'd be like, oh my God, I know them. And then I'm like, wait, I don't know those kids. And I never wanted that to be something that people experienced with my children. So I use pseudonames for them. I reference them as the pseudonames or my toddler and my baby. I make content around maybe activities we're doing or meals I'm making for them and that sort, but I choose not to share their face on my platform.
I'm shocked by that daycare. I'm still like shocked by that.
No, it was the crazy. I was like, what the actual F is happening here?
They took your photo to use it as like basically an advertisement for their brand and you're not even a part of it. They asked for no permission. They did not pay.
Well, that's the other thing. Being an influencer, I also know like that's fucked because that's money. But then I was like, no. On the more intense level, you don't use my child. And even my girlfriend, who's not a public figure, she just has a public profile. I think maybe like under 1,000 followers. It's like her personal account. She texted me freaking out one day because some random person took all of her pictures, including ones of her child, and made some like spam account and started following her. We got it shut down. But even that, it's like you just have no idea what people are doing with this content or information.
Especially with the names and faces and everything. Like, again, right now, it might not be a problem. But the older they get, and I don't mean like they're adults and they don't want their baby picture on the internet. I mean, like they're 10 and they won an award at school and people know their name. Like they can figure out exactly what school they go to, exactly what class, exactly what time you pick them up, like everything. And stalking does happen. So I get very like protective over that. And there's so much that I don't share about my sister just because that really started to sink in once she became a teen and just started being like involved in her own community. And I didn't want my online community to influence the safety of her being a normal kid, you know?
Yeah. And I also think that like there are so many things that we experience with our children, I'm speaking as my husband and I, that I choose not to share online because like that's their story. I don't want to be sharing intricate details of certain things that like maybe they don't want on the internet later on. And so I always think about it from the lens of no matter what I put out there, my kids, I don't think they will, but I'm just assuming they will watch it one day. That is always what I rely back to if I think about, do I want to post this? Do I want to talk about this? Do I want to mention it?
There's going to be some really interesting psychological research on kids of influencers. Yeah, we're going to see a lot of movies. We're going to see a lot of documentaries. We're going to see a lot of shocking things. And I really respect and admire people who think deeply about it because I think a lot of times people don't think that deep. What really changed me was that one person on TikTok who can find you from a selfie.
I don't know if I know that one. There's a different one that finds people in her comments. And I honestly want to hire her to be like, can you find these people?
All these haters. No, that one, I know her too, where she finds people based on their comments, like where they work and whatever. No, there's this one guy on TikTok who people will be like, all right, Joe, whatever his name is, where am I? And they'll just be like in a parking lot somewhere. And he'll be like, okay, well, judging by this species of palm tree, you're in this part of California. And because the road is going this way and not that way, you're standing on the south side. And if I zoom in here on Google Earth, you'll see there's a McDonald's on the northeast corner of da da da. And he'll just like go on and it's like a 3-minute video and he can find exactly where they are.
That's crazy.
Insane. And he's done it dozens and dozens of times of just like random strangers who like ask for it, obviously. And I'm at a point where like, if we're going on a walk in the neighborhood, I will not post a photo. Or if I do, I'll like block out every little thing, the type of the species of grass, like you cannot know it.
No, I mean, yeah, that's the downside of the internet, unfortunately, is like, there are some scary people in this world.
Okay, well, not to make us all really like stressed out and anxious, but let's just stay here for a second. And could you tell me about like what postpartum anxiety feels like since my mom never had it and can't talk about it at all?
Well, it's interesting because what your mom said was one of the main things that I experienced with postpartum anxiety. Where did you ever watch the movies Final Destination?
No, I didn't.
Don't watch them. It was a thing in the 90s, early 2000s, where it was basically this series of movies. I don't know why I watched them all so many times, but my sister and I did, where they would see something happen. There's like this one vivid scene where they're driving on the road and there's a truck in front of them with all these like long wood pieces and it fell off. Like they would basically see themselves dying. And then they'd come back and it was a daydream, but they're in the moment. And so then they like would avoid it, if that makes sense. But then it would like haunt them down the way where there'd be something else. So they were basically seeing all these tragic things happen to themselves. It's a messed up series. But I use this as the way to equate the type of thoughts I experienced during postpartum, the first go around, because I think if you saw those movies, it makes sense. I considered them final destination thoughts. That's what I called them. Turns out they're intrusive thoughts. That's a more like actual term for them, where it's a very confusing experience. And it happened like day one home from the hospital, very early on. You don't want to do these things. There's no part of you that's like, oh, I want to do this. But you see yourself doing these horrible things to your child. And it's hard to talk about because they're so messed up and there's a lot of shame in there. But I would basically see myself walking through like an open doorway and smashing his head on the side, or dropping him on our hardwood floor, or like turning and smacking his head into our countertop, like fucked up things. Or I'd put him on the ground and I all of a sudden would see like a painting hanging on the other side of the room. And I'd be like, oh, that's going to fall off and somehow shatter glass, like just messed up thoughts. I think it was my body's way of trying to control what felt so uncontrollable. So almost like preparing myself for the absolute worst case potential. And what helped me was actually saying them out loud to my husband and my therapist and reminding myself, like, this is not reality. These are just my thoughts. This is not what's actually happening. My brain is just trying to prepare myself for the worst and protect my child. So my anxiety showed right away with that. But then also, I don't think I realized how intense it was until my second go around, because it's been completely different, but very controlling and obsessive over the schedule, the feeding, the sleeping, all of those things that I felt, oh, I can control by doing this because I feel so out of control in this new role. So those were really my anxieties and just this like underlying buzz. If you've had anxiety like that, you know what I mean? It's just this like, your body is buzzing. You don't feel grounded at all. It's just as if you chugged a liter of like cold brew concentrate and you haven't done anything. A little later on is when I experienced postpartum depression. And that was more around month like 4 to 8. And that was a real reckoning of like, who am I? What is my identity? What is my life? I'm so blessed. Why am I not happy? How am I ever going to continue to do this? Those types of thoughts. I just felt like this dark cloud was over me at all times. And it was never towards my child. My child was like what got me through it all. But it was this just real feeling of wanting to be in a dark, silent room by myself forever. And it was like nothing I had experienced prior.
Yeah, because those like intrusive thoughts, I mean, again, I'm not a mom, but like I remember when my sister was born and I was 10 and a half and I remember having those.
People can experience them with babies outside of being the mother.
I've also experienced them with just anything that I've loved a lot. Like sometimes I'll lay at night and I'll have this like insane fear. I'll be like, what if I accidentally cheat on my husband? And I just like can't sleep. So like, what did you do? What are we doing?
Yeah, what do we do? One, like speaking them out loud, reminding myself, this is not reality. This is just a thought. But acknowledging it really helped me rather than like trying to shut it down and being like, no, don't think that. I'm on medication. So I was working with professionals and increasing my dosage. I really was trying, and this is, I think, really hard, but like so imperative as a parent to find time to fill my cup and not just like give, give, give. And that could be 5 minutes in the morning to just sit and breathe before you go on your day of like taking care of someone. Or I got noise canceling headphones and I would listen to happy music in the morning and just like dance for 5 minutes before I woke up my son. Those were the things that probably helped the most, and talk therapy. And then I have a few mantras that I go back to and I always remind people of. The first being, it's all temporary. And I know that sounds so obvious, but it's really important to come back to, because you convince yourself that this is going to be your life forever. I convinced myself I will never sleep again. I convinced myself I'll never have a minute to myself, like all of those things. And yes, hopefully your child is permanent, but the stage of their life is temporary. And I lean on that in good times and bad, because that's like the gift and the thief of motherhood, is that your child's stage is all temporary, because the highs are so high and they don't last forever. And so that mantra helps me lean into those moments and really like try to soak them in as much as I can. And the lows feel really low, but they're also not forever. I think that's one I always try to remind myself of. The other one is, you're not alone. And I say this all the time, but no matter what you're experiencing, someone out there is experiencing something either the same or similar. And finding people to connect with about those emotions is so helpful and beneficial. There is a world outside of this, and you will return to it at some point, even though it feels so far away.
One thing that they say in my culture, Russian people are very harsh sometimes. But I think if said with a different tone, it could be validating. One thing that midwives say to birthing mothers, like as they're going through painful contractions, and you see it on all the movies and everything, they tell them, you're not the first and you're not the last.
No, but it's so true. When I am like scared about something, or, you know, when I was scared about delivering, I'm like, people used to deliver in caves with none of the medical help that we have, or medicine, or any of it. And like, we survived, because look at us, we're still here as a species.
They might have died in childbirth, but the species will survive.
I mean, yes, not all of them survived, but that's why we don't give birth in caves anymore, you know? So we evolved. But like, I do rely on those thoughts sometimes, where I'm like, it's going to happen. It's going to happen the way it happens. And I can try to do things to help, whether it be if you're trying to get pregnant, or if you're pregnant and you're nervous about the pregnancy. But like, at the end of the day, so much is kind of out of our control. And that for me almost provided comfort to be like, okay, then the 10% or 50 or whatever percent you decide is not up to me.
Well, thank you so much for sharing, Cameron. I really enjoyed talking with you, and hope we can do it again.
Thank you so much for having me.
One last thing before we farewell, my self-lovers. If you've been enjoying the Mary's Cup of Tea podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you could leave a review on Apple or rate the show on Spotify. You can do this by searching for the show Mary's Cup of Tea. Scroll all the way down on Apple Podcasts and you'll see stars, where you can click one of the stars and leave a few kind words. It just means so much to me, because I'm so behind the scenes when I'm podcasting, so I don't really get to see the impact of the show unless you leave a review. And on Spotify, there's just a button that says rate the show, and it'll let you put however many stars you want. Your feedback helps the podcast grow, and as someone whose love language is words of affirmation, your kind words mean the world to me. Thank you so much for supporting the show and helping me spread the gift of self-love. I love you all so much, and I will talk to you in next week's episode.